On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyett.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, the New Zealand Prime Minister says she'll raise the plight of the refugee on Manus Island when she meets Malcolm Turnbull this weekend.
Look, I think anyone would look at a situation like that and see the human face. What is an issue that New Zealand is in the lucky position of not having to struggle with and Australia has.
Also tonight, Uzbekistan becomes a big source country for militants linked to IS.
Through its media, through its propaganda, IS has shown a number of Uzbek in its ranks, mainly carrying out suicide attacks in Iraq and Syria, but also being, you know, sympathizers of the group.
And new research suggests more small businesses are hiring migrant workers to get innovative ideas and boost productivity.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
It's 6 o'clock and with the news, I'm Mike Tomalaris. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is facing growing calls for an audit of MPs, including from within his own ranks. It comes in the wake of former Senate President Stephen Parry's resignation, becoming the first Liberal to lose their seat in the dual citizenship scandal. Last week, the High Court disqualified five parliamentarians, including former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce under Section 44 of the Constitution, which prohibits dual citizenship. The names of four new senators to replace them will be revealed on November 10. Prime Minister Turnbull has reiterated it's up to politicians to reveal if they have concerns about their citizenship status. While speaking to the Nine Network, Immigration Minister Peter Dutton has hinted that former Prime Ministers could be among those whose citizenship status is in doubt.
I suspect if you go back over the last couple of decades, you'd find people, including Prime Ministers, frankly, who weren't qualified. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but the onus is on the individual to demonstrate that they're eligible, that they're in compliance with that particular provision.
US President Donald Trump has called for the death penalty for an Uzbek immigrant accused of using a truck to mow down pedestrians on a New York City bike path, killing eight, calling him a terrorist. Saifullo Saipov has told investigators he'd been inspired by IS videos and had been planning Tuesday's attack for a year. He has attended court in a wheelchair, with prosecutors revealing he said he felt good about what he had done while being treated in hospital. The 29-year-old could face life in prison or capital punishment. Investigators have found thousands of IS-related propaganda on a mobile phone belonging to Saipov, including videos of IS prisoners being beheaded. Attending a vigil, regional director of New York's Anti-Defamation League, Evan Bernstein, says the city will move past the tragedy.
I think it shows just how what an amazing city New York is. You know, the fact that this is a melting pot for all cultures, and when things happen as horrific as it was with the tragic terrorist incident, that it shows that we can quickly come together and show our solidarity for everybody.
Commemorations are underway to mark the 75th anniversary of the Kokoda campaign at the Australian War Memorial in Canberra, marking the event where Australians retook Kokoda after an invasion by the Japanese in 1942. More than 600 Australians died on the Kokoda track, and a further 1,100 were killed in subsequent battles. War Memorial Director Brendan Nilsson has paid tribute to the bravery of the soldiers involved.
They, like you, were once young. But they gave their youth, 641 of them at Kokoda and 1,204 at the beachhead campaigns in 1942. They gave their youth and others their lives for us and for our freedoms.
A Colombian court has sentenced Australian drug mule Cassie Sainsbury to a maximum of 6 years in jail and fined her $117,000 under a plea deal struck between her lawyers and the prosecution. The 22-year-old had been facing up to 30 years in prison over drug trafficking charges. Sainsbury was caught with 5.8 kilograms of cocaine hidden inside 18 headphone boxes as she tried to leave Bogota Airport in April. She could be released after just 18 months, with time already served and good behaviour taken into account. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is expected to discuss the closure of the Australian-run Manus Island detention centre when she meets Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull in Sydney on Sunday. In June 2016, then-leader John Key offered for New Zealand to take 150 refugees each year from Australian detention centres. Ms Ardern has suggested she is willing to uphold the promise. She says the situation on the island is serious.
Look, I think anyone would look at a situation like that and see the human face of what is an issue that New Zealand is in the lucky position of not having to struggle with and Australia has. I am looking forward, though, to having a conversation directly with the Prime Minister on Sunday about some of those issues and New Zealand's role and view on Manus Island in particular.
British Defence Secretary Michael Fallon has announced he will resign amidst an ongoing sexual harassment scandal in the UK Parliament. It's the first resignation from the British Parliament after growing complaints about inappropriate behaviour from politicians. Mr Fallon has apologised for his behaviour. And a quick look at tomorrow's weather. Friday in Perth, a sunny day, a top of 28 degrees. Adelaide, a possible shower, 19. In Melbourne, a shower or two, 16. Hobart, more showers coming, 15 degrees. In Canberra, partly cloudy, 21. In Sydney, similar conditions. That should be warm conditions in 26. In Brisbane, possible morning showers, 29. Cairns, a shower, light winds, 31. And Darwin, partly cloudy, 35. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News tonight at 6:30.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 6:07. Papua New Guinea's elder statesman, Sir Michael Somare, has called for refugees to be sent back to Australia as the UN warns of an unfolding humanitarian crisis on Manus Island. Hundreds of men continue to hold out in the former Manus detention centre for a second day after Australia shut it late on Tuesday. PNG police have said that they will not forcibly remove the men and will respect their human rights. SBS World News correspondent Stefan Armbruster has been monitoring the developments, and he told me that Sir Michael Somare says the men are being treated like animals.
Well, Sir Michael Somare is the founding father of Papua New Guinea. He was involved with an earlier version of offshore detention called the Pacific Solution, that one that was created under the Howard government in Australia. And he was involved in the end of that process. He was involved in the creation of the current system. But basically, he says that what he's seeing is that the people are being treated like animals. They're not being treated with dignity, that the agreement for the current system that was struck with Papua New Guinea and Australia, it didn't require them to settle in Papua New Guinea, so they shouldn't be settling here, and the Australian Papua New Guinea government should talk and find a way of sending them back to Australia.
We saw the actor Russell Crowe tweeting his support today.
Yeah, so they're getting some quite powerful allies now. Russell Crowe using some rather colourful language, but basically he was saying Manus, a nation's shame, lives held in limbo, lives lived in fear and despair. It's a disgrace. So he is joining the chorus. There's mounting international attention on this issue. Nick McKim, the Green Senator, was on Manus, and news agencies from around the world, CNN, Fox News in America, the BBC and others, they all interviewed him, and this is getting international exposure.
Can you clarify exactly what the position is of the UNHCR in relation to these men?
The UNHCR is not involved in processing these men. They have two observers on the island who are basically watching what's going on. They've issued a report today where they're basically saying it's an unfolding, it's a humanitarian emergency unfolding on the island. They're saying that the places the men are supposed to move to out of the detention centre, because they're refusing to leave the detention centre because they're saying they can't go into the community, it's not safe for them there, they've been assaulted and attacked. There's not the services there, and they never wanted to resettle in Papua New Guinea. They never agreed to that. The accommodation they're supposed to be moved to as Australia shuts down the detention centre, basically some of that isn't ready. And there's the UNHCR has said basically the support services that would be offered there, the medical help, the mental trauma counselling, is just basically inadequate. And that's their position.
And finally, the position of the PNG police.
Well, the commander of the provincial police force He's said that basically the police are going to respect the human rights of the refugees and the non-refugees in what's left of the Australian detention centre there. They won't use force. That's not to say the PNG Navy won't use force, but at the moment the PNG Navy seems to be saying that they're holding back, according to newspaper reports in Papua New Guinea today. So it's a wait-and-see situation to see what will happen. Basically, the people who are inside are being told once you leave, you can't come back in. They've got no food. They've dug a well overnight to get access to water. They've got running out of medicines. It's a pretty dire situation for them, really.
SBS World News correspondent Stefan Armbruster. Still to come tonight, the Democrats call for Donald Trump to reverse cuts to anti-terrorism programs.
I repeat my call. Mr. President, reverse the cuts you made in the one of the very best programs we have for anti-terrorism funding. That's what helps our law enforcement go after terrorists.
And you can see more on that story on our website, sbs.com.au/news. You can also live stream the nightly TV bulletin on our website from 6:30. 13 past 6. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has rejected calls for a citizenship audit of all members of Federal Parliament while admonishing the resigning Liberal Senator Stephen Parry. Senator Parry, the Senate President, is quitting Parliament after disclosing that his British links, a disclosure the Prime Minister says should have not been delayed like it was. Mr Turnbull says it's up to MPs to reveal any worries they have that their citizenship status could rule them ineligible to sit in Parliament. His comments come as the High Court directed that the Australian Electoral Commission run special counts to replace Larissa Waters, Scott Ludman, Malcolm Roberts and Fiona Nash. This report from Andrea Nierhoff.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull didn't learn of Liberal Senator Stephen Parry's dual citizenship dilemma until it emerged in the media, and he savaged the resigning Senate President for not revealing that dilemma earlier. Mr Turnbull says it's up to federal politicians to reveal when they are worried their citizenship status rules them ineligible to sit in Parliament. Senator Parry has received advice from the British Home Office that he holds British citizenship through his British-born father. That makes him the eighth parliamentarian and the first Liberal caught up in the scandal over dual citizenship. Mr Turnbull says Senator Parry should have acted sooner.
I'm disappointed that Senator Parry didn't make public this issue, quite some time ago. I mean, he said, I learned about it probably about the same time you did on Tuesday. He chose to delay his reporting of it. He should have reported it much earlier, and it could have been referred to the High Court together with the other citizenship by dissent cases.
The bombshell followed a High Court ruling that found five politicians, including former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce, were ineligible for Parliament because of dual citizenship. Senior Liberals say, following Senator Parry's resignation, they are confident there will be no more citizenship surprises in the party. And the Prime Minister has rejected calls for an audit of all MPs and senators.
I mean, what is an audit? Does that mean that somebody is going to undertake extensive genealogical research on every member of Parliament and senator, undertake extensive research into foreign laws?
Immigration Minister Peter Dutton suggests even former Prime Ministers could have been in breach of Section 44 of the Constitution.
Obviously, a lot of people were waiting to see how the court ruled and whether or not particular people would be captured by the legislation. I think people know, at least to a limited degree, their backgrounds and their histories, and if they need to do some research. And this is across politics. It applies to candidates who have run. And I suspect if you go back over the last couple of decades, you'd find people, including Prime Ministers, frankly, who weren't qualified.
Liberal MP Kevin Andrews says the issue will continue to fester, though, unless it's resolved, perhaps through the Australian Electoral Commission.
If I was the Prime Minister, I would be requesting the AEC, for example, to immediately undertake an examination of every MP and senator and to report as soon as possible back to the government. If we don't do that, this is just going to continue to fester along and cause problems politically. But as a matter of principle, if we want to stop the further erosion of confidence in probably our most significant institution, namely the Parliament, then we have to address the issue.
the High Court has directed the Electoral Commission to run special counts to replace Larissa Waters, Scott Ludlam, Malcolm Roberts and Fiona Nash next Monday. The Commission is to file the results the next day. A hearing to announce the names of the new senators will be held on November the 10th.
Andrea Nierhoff with that story, which was produced by Peggy Giacomellis. Coming up, support for the Victorian government's controversial euthanasia bill is wavering as the debate moves to the state's upper house.
I'm hoping it will pass, that something will pass. It is important, but if they keep on making these changes, as I said, it'll be an extremely unworkable piece of law.
That's euthanasia advocate Dr. Philip Nitschke. More on that a bit later. But to the United States now, where Donald Trump has called the suspect in the New York City truck attack an animal and wants to end the visa program that enabled him to enter the country. Mr. Trump says he'll ask the US Congress to begin work immediately to dismantle the diversity immigrant visa program. This report from Peggy Giacomellis.
United States President Donald Trump has quickly reprised his election call for tougher immigration laws as a first line of defence against terrorism following the New York truck attack. Eight people were killed when a man in a rental truck ploughed along a bicycle path in Lower Manhattan yesterday in what authorities have called a terrorist attack. Authorities have identified the driver as Uzbek immigrant Saifolo Saipov, who was shot and wounded by police. Mr. Trump says tougher vetting is needed in the US immigration program and the diversity immigration visa program needs to end.
Well, they say he came in through that program, so we'll see. We're looking at it, but they say he came in. Look, it's very simple. What we are demanding is merit-based immigration. We want people that are going to help our country. We want people that are going to keep our country safe. We don't want lotteries where the wrong people are in the lotteries. And guess what? Who are the suckers that get those people? And we want a merit-based system. And we do not want chain migration, where somebody like him ultimately will be allowed to bring in many, many members of his family. And we don't want that.
The Diversity Visa Lottery distributes around 50,000 visas to people from countries where there is a low rate of immigration to the United States. In Twitter posts, the Republican president has linked Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer to the visa program, and Senator Schumer has fired back.
Look, the president ought to stop tweeting and start leading. The American people long for leadership, not divisiveness, not finger-pointing, not name-calling. This is a tragedy. It's less than a day than after it occurred, and he can't refrain from his nasty, divisive habits. He ought to lead, and the best way he can lead is increase anti-terrorism funding. Again, I repeat my call. Mr. President, reverse the cuts you made in the one of the very best programs we have for anti-terrorism funding. That's what helps our law enforcement go after terrorists.
Uzbekistan, a predominantly Muslim Central Asian nation, former Soviet republic, is not one of the predominantly Muslim countries covered by Mr. Trump's travel ban. Authorities say it's likely the 29-year-old immigrant followed instructions posted online by IS. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but a BBC analyst of such groups, Mina Alami, says Uzbekistan has become a big source country for militants linked to IS.
IS has featured a big number of Uzbek militants in its ranks. And we have attacks in Turkey, for example, the New Year nightclub attack on the 1st of January 2017, the suspect was Uzbek. So in general, through its media, through its propaganda, IS has shown a number of Uzbek in its ranks, mainly carrying out suicide attacks in Iraq and Syria, but also being, you know, sympathizers of the group.
U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham has urged authorities to treat Mr. Saipov as an enemy combatant. That would allow investigators to question him without a lawyer present. President Trump says he would be open to transferring Mr. Saipov to the military prison at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba, where alleged September 11 plotters are among those held. New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo says Mr. Saipov had been lured by groups like IS while living in the United States. But Mr. Cuomo has condemned President Trump's response, saying it's just what terrorists would want.
You play into the hands of the terrorist to the extent you disrupt and divide and frighten people in this society. And the tone now should be the exact opposite by all officials on all levels.
The so-called diversity immigration visa program under attack was created by Congress in 1990.
Peggy Giacomalos reporting there. New research suggests that many small businesses in Australia are choosing to hire migrant workers to attract innovative ideas and to boost productivity. The data also shows that smaller firms are reinvesting almost half of every dollar they receive back into the communities where they exist. Natasha Kellios reports.
An independent study suggests one in four small business owners feels foreign workers drive innovation and offer a fresh perspective within the business. The study, commissioned by American Express, has found many employers feel migrants improved their business's productivity, with specific skill sets difficult to find locally. The Council of Small Business Australia's Peter Strong says businesses that employ migrant workers are contributing to cultural diversity.
The businesses that employ migrant workers add to the diversity of our culture. A lot of Australians go overseas as well, and they work overseas. So migrant workers bring different food, different cultures, different ways of doing things. They're obviously learning from us as well as they go along. And it just adds to that wonderful diversity that is Australia.
The study also found, on average, 42 cents of every dollar spent at a small business goes back into the local community. It found that happens through charities, sponsoring schools and local sporting teams, employing residents or contracting local suppliers. Former builder Christian Bonn, a baker based in inner Sydney, had a dream to bring traditional French baguettes and pastries from New Caledonia all the way to Australia. He imported French machinery and now employs French staff while sponsoring the local police Australian rules football team.
It's amazing because it's a small place and it's a lac in French. Why? Because the decoration is French, because the product in French and the staff in French. And when you stop in Surreal for coming in my bakery, you are in French.
Peter Strong says migrant-owned businesses love giving back to their local communities.
We see big business does that, and they'll do it at the corporate level. But you see those little football teams out in the community, and they've got the name of a bakery on the back or something like that. And that is culture, that is community, and that works really well. And migrant businesses are very giving. They love charity. They love giving to people. They understand that people will give back as well. If you sponsor a local football team, they'll come and buy your pies.
Katrina Constance handles the small merchants business at American Express. She says smaller businesses are fighting for dollars against bigger retailers.
Alarmingly, we are seeing some of our statistics indicate that consumers are increasing the frequency of their spend in larger businesses versus small. We're seeing those rates drop in small businesses. And so an initiative like Shop Small is here to try to remind consumers that if they want to see these small businesses survive and thrive, they've got to get behind them.
Katrina Constance wrapping up that report from Natasha Kellios. Support for the Victorian government's controversial euthanasia bill is wavering as the debate moves to the state parliament's upper house. Various amendments have been proposed, but euthanasia advocates argue that the changes could make it an unworkable piece of law. Here's Hannah Sinclair.
In its original form, the Victorian government's controversial voluntary assisted dying bill would make terminally ill people with up to 12 months to live eligible for an assisted death. The bill needs 21 votes to pass the state's upper house of parliament, but so far has attracted about 20. Various MPs are saying amendments are needed, some involving changes which would require people to be medically assessed as having as little as 3 months to live. Concerns about the roles of general practitioners and funding for palliative care have also been raised. Premier Daniel Andrews had said he would not accept amendments ahead of the bill's debate 2 weeks ago in the lower house, where it passed after a marathon sitting. But Labor's senior upper house MP, Gavin Jennings, has now conceded the government may have to accept limited amendments to the bill to get the 21 votes. Euthanasia advocate Dr. Philip Nitschke has told the ABC that if too many changes are made to the bill, it will not be practical.
I'm hoping it will pass, that something will pass. It is important. But if they keep on making these changes, as I said, it'll be an extremely unworkable piece of law.
The Victorian Opposition's Assistant Health Spokeswoman, Margaret Fitzherbert, has told the ABC she will be voting against the bill. Ms Fitzherbert says she has concerns about the safeguards and has criticised the state government for not being open to amendments earlier.
Issues like the length of time that someone may take to make such a request, issues about how the substance that people may use is going to be safely secured within a home. These are the sorts of things that we really need to be focusing on instead of just sort of, you know, simple comparisons with overseas legislation, I believe.
A former Northern Territory Chief Minister says any passage of euthanasia laws in Victoria could open the door for the legislation to be reintroduced to the Territory. Marshall Perron introduced the first voluntary euthanasia legislation for the Northern Territory in 1995, but the federal government at the time overturned it.
For the first time in 20-odd years, we will be in a position where the territories will no longer be seen as having overstepped the mark, to have acted somewhat irresponsibly. Those arguments will disappear as soon as another state adopts basically what the Northern Territory had done.
Sue Jensen, a woman terminally ill with lung cancer, has told the ABC she wants options available to her and wants her voice and those of others dying to be heard.
For me, it's about choice. I want to be able to have a choice of all the options that there are available to me in the management of my illness.
Sue Jensen ending that report by Hannah Sinclair. A look at the news headlines now. Aung San Suu Kyi has visited Myanmar's Rakhine State for the first time since attacks by militants from the Rohingya Muslim minority 2 months ago sparked a refugee crisis. Police in the US state of Colorado are searching for a gunman who opened fire in a supermarket, killing three people before fleeing. Aid agencies have called on the government not to walk away from constitutional recognition after it rejected a proposal for an Indigenous voice in Parliament. Other stories making news today. Treasurer Scott Morrison wants banks and other lenders to compete for the best customers under a tool that will rank borrowers. The government plans to introduce a mandatory comprehensive credit reporting regime from July 1 next year. That's as opposed to negative credit reporting, where people are deducted points for negative spots on their credit history. If borrowers have a good credit history, they'll be able to demand a better deal on their interest rates or be able to shop around. And the Australian Council of Trade Unions has called for a minimum wage earners to receive an extra $80 per week to meet the rising cost of living. ACTU Secretary Sally McManus argues that a living wage should be measured as 60% of the medium wage as recognised by the OECD. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see SBS World News on television right across Australia right now, and you can live stream the bulletin at sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Diet. Thanks for listening.